Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Beth, who is here to speak with us about her experience of participating in the recent email class on communication. Welcome, Beth.
Hi, Jen.
Hey, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for asking me to participate.
Mm-hmm. So the email class on communication, it was kind of another stellar one, wasn't it?
Oh, you know, I always think that the last one was the best one until the next one comes along, and there it is, even better.
Yeah.
It just so flies in the face of conditioning.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and I especially felt like that with this one because it's not that it's the first exploration of communication at all. I mean, that's often something we talk about in practice, but I remember for years, Sherry really talking about, you know, we're going to write a book on communication and just seeing how so much suffering happens around communication. It feels like, wow, this class was really the next kind of deep exploration of that.
Yes, exactly. And that is how I felt about it. And really looking at communication in my own life and especially around this time of year, how important it strikes me to be really clear in communication.
Uh-huh. Say more.
Well, I guess it's kind of around the idea of the holidays and expectations and getting together with family mm-hmm. and how much pressure is put on conditioning puts on me to be a certain way with family. You know, I have to be, the funny one or the one that, you know, always goes with the flow or always does this. And then a certain communication style comes from that. But I think what was so great about this class is how it really offered me a chance to let go of that.
Wow, and even just the way that you framed it, Beth, is something I feel like, at least for me, and I just heard it in response after response from Sherry, gave us that piece of where the pressure that's put on you by, and then almost everyone's going to fill in that sentence with, my family. But that's not what you said, right? The pressure that's put on me by conditioned mind. And that's the piece, realizing that that's the piece that actually gives us a chance to work with it, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And to see it in such stark contrast to, you know, I think what you're pointing to of putting it outside myself or on external people, or if, you know, we know there is no such thing as external people, but, you know, that sense of wanting it to be about someone else when really... Yeah. It's all about me and the conversation that I'm in with conditioning.
Right, right. That conversation that I'm in with conditioning, which is having such an mostly unconscious impact on the way that I'm communicating, which is what I think you were pointing at.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And I'll just give one example, even though I have several, but I'll give one example of... I remember going through one of the email class exercises, and I think it was to draw out and clarify and listen, right? So it was near the end. And I remember going to, you know, several family events, you know, in the next couple of days. And I remember, okay, I'm just going to go, and I'm going to listen, and I'm going to clarify, and this is what I'm going to do, and da-da-da. And I get there, and I mean... I couldn't help. I mean, conditioning couldn't help us. I couldn't help my. I don't know how to quite say it, but I just launched into the conversation. And so what I got to see from that was how conditioning can't direct me to not listen to conditioning.
Yes. Oh. In other words, if I'm tracking what you're saying, it's sort of that decision of how I'm going to be and how it's going to go. And I'm now, these are the things that my new shiny tools from now on, realizing that that's a conditioned setup.
Yes. And I didn't see that until it happened.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is awareness practice in action, right?
Which was so fun. And, you know, I'd get to the end of the night and I'd go, Oh, right. I was going to do that thing. And it didn't happen, but it was so good to see how strong that impulse is with conditioning to just jump in and want to be somebody and say something and do something.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the point you're making that's so critical is that thing that we say of awareness practice begins when the beatings end, because what you're describing is a relationship with all of that of truly awareness. So, you know, probably that original intention very much came from the heart, very much came from, wow, you know, I'm seeing all this stuff in the class and there's this whole other way to be. Let me go try that out. Not realizing there was that sort of standard takeover. Then you get there and what actually happens, you know, conditioning comes in, the talking into whatever. But then at the end of it, you just go, oh, right, I remember I was going to practice. And so I project that gives you access to so much seeing how it works instead of having to be in that place of feeling bad and then just repeating the pattern the next time.
Right. So that so totally leads into my ultimate experience, which was sitting at Thanksgiving dinner, and all of a sudden the conversation turns to, you know, you guessed it, politics, and I see the ramp up. You know, I see the, I've got to, you know, make sure, da-da-da-da, and right at that moment, it just dropped in, and it said, oh, I don't have to do anything. You know what?
Wow.
I could just sit here and listen. You know what? I don't have to fix anything. I have to direct anything. I have to. I mean, it was like, you know, this huge space just opened up around me, and all of a sudden, I got it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. You know, as you describe it, Beth, it's like I just get the sense of it's a gift.
Yeah.
You know, that awareness practice is a gift that we give ourselves, and sitting there at that table, it's like you received it.
Exactly. And what you were saying before about not practicing self-hate on the other previous times, I think was key to being in a place where I could then receive the insight of, oh, you know what? I don't actually have to do anything here.
Right.
And you know, that just made me, I mean, I was grinning ear to ear, and here's this, you know, conversation going on, and I'm sure, you know, what's she so happy about? Nobody else is happy at the table, but I'm pretty happy.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, that is, there's just everything in that. You know, to have the miracle of being able to be in the middle of a situation where so habitually you would be suffering, which is exactly where, you know, the voices were headed to. But, and yet you saw it, were there for it, so you saw the point, you didn't go there, and then you just got to sit there and be happy.
Yeah, exactly. And as you reflect that, what drops in is that idea of just continually showing up.
Yeah,
to see
exactly.
What happens, whether it's whether conditioning takes over or not, whether I'm there for the insight or not, it's just a willingness to show up.
That's what was coming up for me, too, because as you described the previous situation, it's like that place where I remember Sherry talking with someone on the radio show, I don't know, a year or so ago, where, you know, they're just in a loop. And, what you know, in that very similar to what you're talking about, like, oh, this intention, and, you know, here I'm going to really do this thing, and then over and over, not doing it. But that I remember Sherry saying something, this is what I heard in it, something along the lines of that when we stay there and we keep that intention, it's a foregone conclusion that it is going to happen. So in other words, with that attitude of mind that you're bringing to it, you were at some point going to get to that point where you would be in that situation and see that choice point because you'd be present for it. And when we're not impatient for that and think that that's the goal and, you know, demanding that, and meanwhile we're just in curiosity and, you know, unconditional love for ourselves in the process, it's just, it's such a lovely adventure.
Exactly. And I think being able to read through the responses of the communication class and just seeing the multitude of experiences out there and the threads of commonality between all of them and just just remembering, or not even remembering, but just being saturated with this sense of, I'm just going to keep doing it. And, you know, something's going to come in, and maybe, and like I said, at the Thanksgiving table, it was like, just listen, you know? Yeah. And so there was no extra techniques or any, you know, nothing else.
Right. Exactly so. Right. But the, you know, sometimes the way we talk about it is that the intelligence that animates is living us perfectly. And what we're practicing is just, you know, quietly getting out of the way so it can do that. That we're practicing just being here so that that can actually happen.
Yeah, exactly. It was fun to practice with each of the tools and the techniques. And it was fun to see when they worked and when they didn't work, or when, you know, when they brought to bear, and when it was just, who knows what it was.
Yeah. Oh, it's so fun. I'm just so struck by, it's such a great description that you're giving us of, that is practice, right? That is practice.
Yeah. And to have the assistance, great email classes and Sangha, it's the gift you mentioned, you know, such a gift.
It is such a gift. Yeah. It definitely feels like it brings practice to another level when we're in that time. And for me, it lasts quite a bit beyond that, because I always read all the responses. And so I'm about a third of the way through the responses. So, you know, I get to live in that world for quite a bit longer. So it's really fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much, Beth, for being with us this afternoon and sharing your experience.
Well, thank you again, Jen, and thank you to Sangha.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Sangha. Amen. Thanks, Beth.
Take care. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. All right, Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Beth. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael. How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. I love that conversation. Did you love that conversation?
Yes, it was great. It was great.
I pictured, you know, it's like having a little modern Buddha drop in to your Thanksgiving dinner, right? So here, all these people, all this family, and as family isn't enough of an opportunity for one another, then you throw in an election where, you know, part of the family's on this side, part of the family's on this side, and whee! And then this is all going on, and here's this person just sitting there smiling. and intuitively we sense she's having a better time than we are. You know, and then that growing, what is she doing? Of course, maybe she got into a little more of the festive drinks than the rest of us, but then we suspected that, you know, it's the most wonderful distraction in the world, right? Because people can't really stay as focused on being lost in conditioned mind when there's somebody just sitting there smiling as they're doing what they're doing. You know, I just love that image. I'm gonna emulate that.
Mm. Twinkling.
Twinkling. Just sitting there twinkling as people are getting more and more and more identified and riled up and upset, and somebody's just sitting there listening and smiling and twinkling. Beautiful.
Yeah,
and, go ahead.
I was just going to say that what occurred to me as you were describing that is that this person's not taking it personally.
Yes. Just loving folks. Just loving them.
Exactly.
You know, if we start listening to one another, then we can be upsetting. But if we just stay with loving one another, then what difference does it make, really? And both Beth and Jen were talking about it being a gift, and it is. Practice, goodness knows, is a gift for us. But I was just thinking what a gift that is for everybody sitting around that table, everybody in that family, to have somebody who's just staying in being present and breathing and loving and accepting and enjoying, and that's a gift.
Yeah, no need to defend oneself against this person who's just sitting there twinkling.
Yes. Yeah. Sounds good. Loved it.
Good. It's good. It reminds me of I Choose Unconditional Love, which we've been practicing from the morning email class. Morning radio show. Yes.
Yeah. This is what I choose. It's what I choose. It's what I want for my life. And so I'm going to stay focused on that. And it is a full-time job to keep my focus of attention, keep attending where I want my attention to be. I choose love, personally. And so that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to breathe in unconditional love and breathe out unconditional love and just focus on that and feel that. Let it spread throughout my body. Let it practice letting it spread beyond my body out into the room and embrace people in it. And, oh, it's a nice thing to be doing.
Lovely. Shall I jump in?
So what else is going on? Yeah. Tell us what's happening.
Okay. In the wake of the presidential election, many in the Sangha have reached out to practice for perspective. In response, a special call-in practice support, Seeing with the Eyes of Love, is being offered weekdays from 9 a.m. to 9:30 a.m. Pacific Time. And for call-in information, visit schedule.livingcompassion.org.
And I think it's basically just how we get to this one, right?
Yes. Same numbers.
Same. Yeah, same stuff. That's handy. Yeah. Goodness knows there are enough phone numbers and codes and that sort of thing. If we get two of them that are alike, that's very helpful.
Yes, and it's been a wonderful support for me. And so thank you and Ashwini for putting that out there. It's just fabulous to have such a consistent daily support.
Well, and for us too. we really enjoy that process and the support as well. So, yeah. It's funny. It's that thing that we talk about so much of the time that, you know, everybody else can have something else going on and they miss this one and they are recorded so people can listen later. But, you know, I can't make this call. But we do. We have to. So it's most helpful for us. And of course, we're both really glad that other people are benefiting and enjoying it and joining us, because otherwise we would just be talking to each other. So it's like you and me. You know, thank goodness people call in. Otherwise, I mean, we can have a nice time, but it's so much more fun if there's more Sangha involved.
Yes, that's true. That's true. And speaking of more Sangha, start 2017 with lots of great support for practice at the annual New Year's retreat in Menlo Park, California, in the San Francisco Bay Area. Mm-hmm. This popular retreat runs from December 27th to January 1st and features meditation, group discussions, yoga, and guidance with you, Sherry.
Mm-hmm. We have a good time.
Yes, we do. And speaking of 2017, the retreat and offerings for next year have been posted.
That's right. Very exciting. We got a good year. Got a good year coming up, unlike these past years where there wasn't that much good stuff going on. This is going to be a good one.
We're turning the corner finally here.
We're turning the corner. We're finally getting practice together, and we're getting a groove here. It's going to be good.
Yes. And so for these and other opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org. And a reminder that we are on Bamboozle number 12, Illusion, the assignment for week one.
Isn't that astounding? We're to 12?
Astounding.
So good.
Already.
Yeah. And it does seem like we started this about 10 years ago, so there is that aspect of it too. But
it's
fun to get through. Yeah. Put these bamboozles behind us Start 2017 bamboozle free.
Yes.
Ha. Good luck on that, huh?
If only it were that easy. Yes. And if you'd like to talk with Sherry today, you can make cash show by pressing star 6 and then 1. And a focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes is great. Okay, Sherry, let's get started.
All right, thank you. Hey, you know, Michael, I wanted to say something. This just dropped in, and it really has to do, I should have said it closer to the conversation that Jen and Beth had about the email class. I can't remember if I mentioned it on open air, but this extraordinary thing that happened in that class. So, you know, I am not a fan of acronyms, especially when it comes to practice. And so as we were going along, I asked people not to use EKC or EKCSH for egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate, but to write it out. Write it as one word so it doesn't, you know, it doesn't count against you, but no initials, no initials. I put out that request, and it was 100% honored throughout the rest of that class. It was a wow for me. I mean, nobody forgot. It was just amazing. Wow. And it was one of those, you know, power to the Sangha. If we wonder if this Sangha is practicing awareness, the answer is yes. I was so touched and just impressed, and all of those responses that we have to that kind of thing, where this just a whole group of people read that and went, okay, and then never forgot. A group of people who can do that can do anything. So I just want people to take that in. You know, to make that kind of, I mean, for those, not everybody listening, of course, was in that class, but for the folks who were and had occasion to get to that juncture and said, oh, we're not doing that anymore, we're doing this. I mean, you truly, freedom is yours. Just claim it. So that's my little thing on that.
Yeah, it is impressive for everybody.
It is so impressive. Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing.
Be proud of
okay,
that.
Great. Well, let's get started.
All right.
First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, this is Jenny from New Mexico. Can you hear me?
Hi, Jenny. I can. There's quite a bit of background noise, but we can hear you.
Okay.
How are you? Long time no get to talk with.
Yeah. Is that better? Can you hear me better?
Yes, it's perfect.
Okay. good. Practice is steady. Just
good.
An everyday thing. It seems to me like once you start practice, that's just it. Like you
well,
are
kind of is. And especially for those of us who are really fortunate.
Oh, yes.
Yeah?
I suppose so.
Yeah. But there are those who start and then fall off the wagon and never are heard from again. But for those of us who are lucky, yes, it becomes addictive, and we are addicts, and we never go through the program to lose our addiction.
Right.
Yeah.
I've fallen off before due to, you know, like something happening in my life. And I was... this was back a year ago or something. I was bamboozled into thinking that, well, not practicing would be better, which, of course, is just another lie.
Yeah, looking back on it, we've all fallen for that, right?
Yeah.
And looking back, we go, wow, that's impressive that I went for that.
Yeah. It was actually practice that saved me. I mean, that's how traumatic it was. And, you know, I have, like, bipolar and stuff, and that stuff can get you down. And it was really the practice that I had, a few years of practice in me before all of that happened. And that's really what saved me, because, you know, I had a different perspective on life, my life, internal life, well, life in general, I guess. It just has to be the whole thing, because, you know, that's you look out at life and you see you, I guess. And it's like how you think of life.
Oh, that is, yes. Yes, indeed. That is beautifully stated. Yeah, go ahead.
It's like how you look at life is what's going on. It's you in your opinions and your world. And
usually for most people, it's egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate.
Right, yes.
Right? It's conditioned mind. We look out at life and think that's life, but really we're just looking at conditioned mind projected outward.
Exactly. And I knew that. I knew that whenever I went under and I was able to say, no. You know, I was able to say, I don't believe in, it was still hard. It was still hard, and I still had depression and stuff, but I was able to stop and say, no, this isn't reality. This isn't, because I remember looking at the world through different eyes, and I knew that looking at the world hadn't changed. It was me who had changed.
Oh, yeah.
And I had changed, and the negativity was coming from a falseness, an ego that was trying to create the illusion of a world that was negative. And I knew that, and that really changed the lows to not so low. And it also helped me dig back out, because I knew there was another place that I could be. And I never stopped practicing and meditating. Became a lifeline. It became an access to a world that was calm. It became an access to a place that was just different. I could get separate from the negativity. I could get separate from the voices and return back to center, which is myself. Like, I could feel the truth of center. I could feel that that was truer, and I knew that it was love.
Yes, and the Buddha, of course, called it a refuge.
Yeah,
and that's just what you're describing, isn't it? There's all this negativity that conditioned mind is projecting out there, and you are one fortunate little cookie to be able to get it, that what I'm seeing is not real. What the reality that's being presented to me isn't real. That's the hardest thing for people to get. Because when we identify, whatever we're identified with, that's what's real. So I'm in a good mood. The world is a happy, glorious place. And then I step in a hole. I'm in the dark room. Everything is hideous. This is what's really true. This is what, and to realize, no, it doesn't change like that. That is so beautiful.
Well, I know that the change is me. I know that nothing around is, and you look at other people and you think, well, you know, everybody's just in a bad mood. And everybody's in a bad mood, you know. And it's like, no, this is what you're seeing, you know. It's they're not in a bad mood. And like, it's weird, because you'll, like, almost think that, like when you're looking at for that, and you look at this person walking, and it's just like everybody looks like you're catching. It's almost like you're catching everybody's frown instead of their smile. But I know I know the truth, because I've been in the light room, and it's not. It's really how we're interpreting all of this in our worlds. And it's like, I don't want to live there. No one would want to. And I know I have a choice. And that's the important thing. is yeah. to really know that you have this choice, like, to keep practicing and to keep listening to, like, Sangha and stuff, and that also becomes, like, a place of light for me, because it's, like, I can listen to everybody else and know that there's all these people who are, like, going back and forth, and I can feel that compassion because I've done that.
Mm-hmm.
And that also becomes, like, a little refuge, and
mm-hmm.
well, it just becomes a light place for me as well.
Yes. And with that, so there I am, and I'm in the dark room,
mm-hmm.
and I know that this is not the only reality. I'm disidentified enough, I've done enough practice, mm-hmm. that I know the light room exists, but I can't get there.
Yes.
And if we just keep staying present, keep breathing, keep being here, instead yeah. of going off into those negative conversations,
right.
pretty soon we see the light.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. you just, you know, part of practice is patience, and part of practice mm-hmm. is knowing that you're not going to force it. Because, you know, if you look at all...
But you can.
Right, yes. You can't force it. I had to learn that, too. You just... Mm-hmm. It's because it's part of... It's almost like part of life. And you just... Life is very, to me, like, you know, it grows, you know, and you know, the flower opens with the sun and closes up at night, and it's just very gentle, and it just kind of flows along, and you just can't make yourself, and it's not compassionate to make yourself happy, you know, that's not your objective.
Mm-hmm.
Your objective mm-hmm. isn't to be always in the light room, you know, your objective is to notice that difference.
Mm-hmm.
And know
to be present.
Right. Yeah.
Right. To be here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, this is very happy to hear. I'm very pleased for you.
Thank you.
That's a lot of work.
That's
a lot of commitment.
It is. But it's mm-hmm. worth it, you know. It's worth it. Worth it to have that option, you know.
Yeah. We don't really have much choice, do we?
And again,
knowing that we don't have a choice is just the most glorious thing to realize.
Right, yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. for practice. Yeah, it does mm-hmm. seem to follow you around. Like, during the day, it's just, like, I'll notice, like also, lately, it's just been a lot of noticing, I was identified with this personality in this situation and that personality in that situation. And that was kind of the one question I had tonight was, it's the speaker, the I that speaks, is that the one that casts the shadow? Like does that create, like, the back and forth, almost like the caught up with the back and forth, the ping pong match, is it the I that speaks, the one that thinks, like, there's a voice that I use in my head to think with? Is that the one that actually casts the shadow? Would the shadow disappear if there was no I that I speak with?
Well, it's
hard to describe.
Interesting. Yeah, it's interesting. And what you're looking at is really, I think, it's the fun of practice. So what people will often think is, so there's me, you know, here I am,
yeah.
me. And I'm looking out, I'm the subject, and I'm looking out at all of these things. And then at a certain point, I realize that I'm also looking at me. So now I've become the object, right? And so that's one fun thing to notice, because when you notice that, then the question arises, well, what is able to observe both the subject and the object? Okay? So the next thing that people tend to come up against is that I am me, so I'm thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of my favorite examples would be something like, I want another cookie,
mm-hmm.
and then I think I hear, well, but I shouldn't have another cookie.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I want another cookie, but you don't need another cookie. You already had a cookie, but I want a cookie. So which one am I? You know, which one is the real person there?
Neither.
And I would say, that's right. Neither of them is. They're
right,
both
yeah.
just ego doing that ping pong thing.
Mm-hmm.
So again, if you can see that,
you can watch it happen.
That's right. If there's watching it, then where are you with the watching?
I'm observing the watching.
Pardon me?
I'm observing it, right?
Yes.
I'm
and yet, is that an I?
No.
Right.
It's not an I. It doesn't speak or think as an I.
It kind of doesn't act like an I, does it?
No.
It's more awareness.
Right.
Yeah. And the thing that we can stumble over is the idea, the heavily conditioned idea that awareness needs somebody to be aware.
Hmm.
And that's a wonderful place to explore.
But if you sit long enough, you're just observing all this stuff in the brain that just seems to go on. And
it does just seem to go on, doesn't it?
Yeah. And you just sit there, and then there's just this observing of that. But then there's movement, and then there's interaction, and then out brings out an I that I speak with. But I know that
Be careful, Jenny. Be careful. It doesn't require somebody to speak. Awareness doesn't require an ego to speak.
It doesn't. Okay.
Just watch. Just watch. Don't assume that it does, okay?
Okay. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I was assuming that there always had to be some sort of I identified to function.
Mm-hmm.
But there isn't.
We do. And we're heavily conditioned to believe that. But I just want you to explore it. Really pay attention to it without any beliefs at all about it. But just watching it for the first time. And just see what you see.
But what about thinking? Because the eye can turn into it thinking as well.
Yes, like, well, in fact, possibly you might explore the reverse, that thinking creates the illusion of an eye.
Oh, okay. The illusion of the eye.
All right, now, don't wait so long to report back, okay?
Yes.
Look into all of this stuff and then let me know what you see, okay?
I will. Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jenny. Good night.
Bye-bye. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Jenny. That was a fascinating exploration, Sherry, of, you know, what is the I and what is thinking? And I get the sense of just kind of sitting still to see what my experience is of all that.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
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 It's like entering a magic kingdom, a magic world.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, exactly. A fascinating one at that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, Sherry, in my new technology here, I'm not sure I know how to play the ads.
Oh, okay. Well, what would it be? What would it be?
We would be talking about Zen coaching. And
Zen coaching. Well, that's a wonderful thing. We could talk about it.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah. So I can't remember how to get there, but something, you go to the website, and I think you click on the pink lotus, and then you follow the prompts. I think there's a little monk there telling you how to get to somebody, and then you write a little note, and then you get a coach, and the coach. Now, here's the thing that I would say that doesn't really say in that little blurb, that coaching really is for people in practice. It's not just—it's not like hiring a life coach. It's really to support. Coaches are there to support people in their practice. They don't teach practice.
Huh.
Yeah, so that good to know, huh? And so
yeah.
Very often when people write to me for a coach, if they're not a part of practice, they don't already have a practice, I encourage them to get involved in the recording and listening practice, which I understand is coming up. It wasn't in your notes, which is interesting. Maybe it's already full. There's a program starting with the recording and listening coming up soon. But anyway, to go in that direction. We always encourage people first to come on retreat and get involved in practice, get grounded in it, and then let the coach assist and support as practice goes forward. And so there. And they're all trained in this practice so that they know how to support people. And like that, there. That's the coaching program.
Great. Yes, I think in much more detail than in that short ad that we usually run. So that's great.
So that's good.
Good. Okay, let's talk with our next caller, Sherry.
Okay. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Vanessa in North Carolina.
Oh, hello, Vanessa. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I can't believe I got on.
I know.
I'm so lucky. let's see. Well, I really just wanted to participate, so that's why I put myself in the queue. So, let's see.
So how is practice since returning from the monastery?
Ah, well, it's let's see. It's great. It's wonderful. And I think I probably think about the monastery and the way everything is set up there pretty much every day, and how it's such a perfect, it just feels like all the practices there are such it's just such a perfect practice, and it's such a perfect practice for life, and to come back to life and bring all those sort of things with me to my life. Well, one thing that I noticed when I was there was how much I wanted to get everything right, you know, and follow all the guidelines exactly and know exactly how, you know, and I just really wanted to get it all right. And what I see is that's exactly how, I guess, ego has me living my life, that I need to get it all right. And that's just false, you know. That's just not true, and that's not the point of the guidelines. It's all just sort of bringing you back to the moment, and it's kind of like the guidelines matter, but they also kind of don't matter.
Exactly. They are there to do exactly what happened to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? We get to see ourselves. They're just a mirror that's held up so that we get to see how we are.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I look at that pretty much every day. And it's been great, and so I'm so grateful for that time, and I can't wait to get back there. That's the other thing that I'm just like, wow, how can I get back there again?
Because it is a perfect place, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not for ego. God knows, not for ego. But for the heart, it's a perfect place. It's everything about it is perfect. You know, the schedule just really takes care of the body, the spirit. You know, the heart is just so happy there. good food and out of doors and sleep well at night. It's quiet. And the stuff that you do is just intelligent stuff to do. You fix food and wash dishes and keep things clean and work in the garden. And it's just, it really is a lovely way to be. Mm-hmm. And the thing that is so interesting to me about it, because, you know, I mean, we didn't create this, obviously. This has been going on since before the Buddha, people living in this way for this purpose. So what we get to see in that, to me, is this and specifically the way you came up with it, right? So there you come into this environment, and ego is just seen really clearly, because it's so out of step with what's going on. What's happening there is that it's really beautiful and it's quiet, and things are really well taken care of. So there's a feeling of kindness and acceptance and all of those kinds of things. And there's ego on about doing it right, getting it right, being perfect, being the, and it's just we get to see it because it's so out of step.
Mm-hmm.
True? Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we get to practice in that, to me, is realizing that all we're required to do in practice in life, I think, is to find compassion. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
So when you say the guidelines don't matter, it really is true in that they are certainly not more important than compassion. Now, that's what ego does to everybody over the guidelines. Just beat them bloody, because you're never perfect enough. You can't remember everything. You can't get everything done fast enough. You can't. And, of course, ego would say, this is really important, because without this pressure to be the right person, you would just slide irrevocably into what you already are, which is the wrong person. And in fact, without ego, you would slide irrevocably into what you actually are, which is loving kindness and compassion.
Mhm.
Yeah.
I see that so often. It's the punishments, it's the beatings, it's the trying to get it right that brings out all the ways that my heart doesn't want to be, you know?
Yes.
And just the, I don't even know, the unkindness, the lack of compassion.
Yes.
It's and it's exactly what I wasn't conditioned to believe. It's the opposite. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. And so when we move into that compassion, that loving kindness, most everybody has a huge fear that, well, I just wouldn't get out of bed in the morning. You know, I'm certainly not going to do the dishes. I'm not going to, no, that's what happens when ego takes over.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what happens when the heart takes over. When the heart takes over, we want to be present. We want to participate. We want to do the best we can do. We want to take care of everything. We want to, Yeah.
I have one story. I'm pretty sure it's related. So, checking the schedule. Somehow, I don't know what happened. Check it 50 million times, and still I got the time for one of the sits wrong. And so I showed up late, and I'm out. Everyone's heading back towards the meditation hall, and I'm like heading off in the other direction and not thinking anything about it. And then I'm like, oh, what if I got it wrong? And I turn around and come back, and I was late. And I guess I thought, I don't know what I thought, but I assumed that I was in for the big beating. But it didn't come. It was just like, oh, I got the time wrong. I guess I'll sit out here till I can get in there. And I didn't. Uh-huh. It was amazing, you know, because what kind of? I mean, I'm sure there's worse things you could do, but that's pretty bad, right? I mean, in terms of missing something. And how many times did I read that? And So anyways, that was also an amazing experience to
Yes, because I project you really got the innocence and the goodness of the person who's there. Somebody who reads that schedule 50 million times a day, just trying her best with everything she's got to be the right person to get to meditation on time. Right? Yeah. And again, those voices would say, well, yeah, because, it's because she's a really good person who wants to do the best that she can do all the time. That's it. That's all that's going on. And then whatever happens, we'll never know what happens with those things. Now, I have this sneaky suspicion, based on nothing except the sneaky suspicion, that when something like that happens, it is because that's your best opportunity to have an experience of the goodness and the innocence of the person who's trying so hard and can't get it right all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that the reward for not getting it right all the time, in spite of our best efforts, is loving kindness.
Right.
So you got to have that. If you'd gotten another beating, it would have been just same old, business as usual. Yeah, did it wrong, get a beating, did it wrong, get a beating. But instead, tried so hard, so wanted to be in meditation. Oh, didn't, how did that work? I mean, I looked at that thing and looked, wow. Well, I guess that brand of perfection is just not available to us. And it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Thank God.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you. I love good stories.
Yeah. Right.
Take care.
Yeah.
Talk to you soon.
Thank you, Michael. Good night.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Vanessa. Okay. Let me make sure. Okay, good. Sherry, I'm just going to check the recording button here on this new layout here. speaking of panic moments, let's see.
Oh, good job.
Phew.
It would be another Vanessa story, though, right?
Perfect.
I think God knows you do the best you can to make this work week after week after week. If something doesn't work, hey.
Oh my God! I just love practice. Oh wow, wow! Always exciting.
Thank you.
Always
exciting. Yes. No reason to be bored.
No reason to be bored. And speaking of not being bored, let's talk to another caller.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. It's Jan in Fremont.
Well, hello, Jan.
Hi.
How are you doing? What's going on?
I'm doing really well, and I just wanted to call with an inspirational thing I heard today. After the call this morning, which the part about taking the energy, the way I'd summarize it, is taking the energy of anger and redirecting it to what we want in life, to what we love.
And then
I heard a recording today on the radio of the person that, there was a lot in it, but one of the things was when he was inspired, this person was inspired for the whole idea of the AIDS Memorial Quilt. And oh my gosh, Sherry, it was exactly that. You know, people are dying left and right of AIDS way back when there was nothing to do for it. And there was tremendous anger about nothing being done by the government or anyone else paying attention. And this came to him. The whole idea of that, when he wanted people to write down the names of people they'd lost, the loved ones they'd lost, and he saw the names you know, just hundreds of names coming in, and they posted it at City Hall in San Francisco, and it looked like a quilt to him, and that's where it started. And what I loved about it, I just have to say, everyone told him it was a stupid idea, that it would never work. And he went ahead with it, and look what happened.
Wow.
Anyway,
and
isn't that
fascinating? Before you go on, that is so fascinating. You know, it's not like the guy said, and so let's see if we can string these together and run across the country with them. He said, why don't we turn these into a quilt? Right? I mean, that it's not outrageous. It's not bizarre. And still, it's a crazy idea. It'll never work. You can't do it. The commitment to negativity that conditioned humans have is just stunning.
Yes, and that's what was so inspiring about this, is this idea comes to him. It's a huge event. He's leading it. And he says, let's do a quilt. And they're going, what? And people made these things from all over the country.
Yeah.
Mailed them to this address they knew nothing about, and he said these stunning pieces of art that had been made with love kept appearing and appearing and appearing. It was so inspiring. So, I given what we've been talking about in the morning, I just had to share that. I know it'll be a different focus tomorrow, but I just had to share that because I certainly am looking for inspiration wherever I go now, and hopefully representing through practice something other than, you know, this is horrible and what are we going to do? So,
yes.
Anyway.
Well, the what are we going to do is the good question, isn't it? So what are we going to do? Because that's what, I mean, in that time, my beloved cousin Garth is one of those that feeling of despair, of hopelessness and powerlessness and what are we going to do? Well, here, let's turn this into love and let's make this love visible.
Yes, and it was from that despair that came. I mean, he was in despair, and that came to him.
Yeah.
And I just thought, if you can do it in that situation, we can do it now.
Yes. Yeah, we just need the inspiration, don't we? We just need the direction. And I don't know, I think I was talking about this on the next call, the 10 o'clock call, but the gal who is collecting scarves for the homeless. She lives in a really cold climate up in Wyoming. And okay, good. Yeah, and so there. There's something that can happen, right? Which is what it must have seemed like to him when he started. Well, this is just this little thing that we can do, and then it just turns into this huge thing. So, you know, one of us is going to have the inspiration. We are. It's going to drop in, and what we're going to do as a sangha is not say, "Well, that's a stupid idea." We're going to say, okay, yeah, all right, let's do that. And then if somebody else has an idea, drop in, then we're going to say, okay, well, we can do that too, right? And we just keep going. As long as the inspiration comes in, we'll keep turning the hopelessness and despair into love and making it visible in the world.
Right, yes. Well, anyway, I just wanted to share that because
it's beautiful. Thank you.
And yeah, it was building on what we talked about, so. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Jan.
Okay. Talk to you later.
Okay. Let us know when it drops in. All right.
Yeah. All of us.
Okay.
Thank you.
All of us. Everybody. Yeah. Okay. We're open. We're open for business.
I love it. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you for joining us, Jan. And we have another caller here, Sherry.
Right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is Carol from Port Townsend.
Hi.
Oh, hello, Carol.
Hi.
How's it going in Port Townsend?
Well, good, really good. I'm doing a lot of practice and very grateful to listen to you and Ashwini and other people on the radio every day. That was such a great gift, even to know that, to hear that it was happening and then to listen to every day. So, so I'm calling because I made a commitment to call every quarter, and I'm happy to get on tonight. And I wanted to celebrate that I've been meditating every day for 2 years and 1 month now since my first retreat. So,
for how long?
2 years and like 1 month. Yeah, 2 years and 1 month. Yeah. So.
Good grief.
Yes, it
is. That is astounding. What are you going to do to celebrate? Meditate?
I'm getting a massage tomorrow. So
very good. That's excellent. And you could celebrate by coming to the New Year's retreat.
I'm coming, yes, I'm coming.
Oh, well, celebrator. I don't have to coach you on celebrating.
I am a celebrator, and I'm really happy to see the 2017 schedule, so I'm really jazzed about that, too. Yeah, so.
Good, good.
Yeah. And let's see. Yeah. There's at first, you know, egos tell me, I don't have anything to talk about, don't call, and I was just getting to be a wreck, and now I feel like I would love to talk to you about a million things. So,
we have so much to talk about. There's no way we're going to have time to touch on part of it.
We just have
ego knows
time.
Nothing. Those voices know nothing.
I know, they know nothing, yeah. Oh, so there's two things I wanted to say, and one is I just appreciate the in that last conversation you had, just the warmth of it. There is just something really touching about that. And the gentleness I can kind of feel that, you know, emanating from the phone or whatever.
Yeah. And that's, it's not quite as visible and tangible and that sort of thing, but kindness. If we just can stay with kindness, loving kindness for one another. There's a contribution we can make.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I too have been listening to the news, and you know, ego wants me to. What are we going to do? Come up with a solution. You know, strain my brain and try and figure this out. And of course, that's not working, but I've come up with some things that I wanted to do that have just dropped in. And so it's just like, oh, this is it. They just dropped in, and they're good ideas, and I'm just going to do them. And, so I'm just really happy.
You
about
feel
that.
Like sharing any of that, letting us know about any of those good ideas?
Yes, I do. Let's see. Well, the first one is I'm going to write a book. And the book is going to be called something like How I Defeated the Dragon and, Changed the World into Loving Kindness, Respect for the Environment and All People, something like that. And that and that idea is to, you know, kind of to contradict ego's idea that this is hopeless, nothing to be done, and that kind of paralysis that can stem from that. And so what I'll do is I'll record what I have done, you know, and so it kind of sets the intention. Well, this is what I'm doing and what we're doing, and here's what I have been doing. So I can't get into that believing ego when ego says, oh, you did the wrong thing or you didn't do enough or whatever. You know, it's like, I'm doing it, you know. So.
I could see that one. You know, when you were talking about it, I thought, gosh, wouldn't that be an amazing collection? You know, if you were to, not you or somebody, you would open that up,
right.
to let's keep a record. Let's have a place where everything that we're doing as collectively, you know, all of us together,
uh-huh.
where we post it, and
yeah.
And no act is too small,
no,
right? And no, no none is too large. All
right.
All are welcome.
Right, and we mm-hmm. are doing it together
uh-huh.
with love.
We're doing it. Yeah. Yeah.
So
we're alchemists.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So another thing I did, I went to a demonstration, and I decided to make a sign because I knew a lot of other people would be talking about the content of the demonstration, and I just made a sign that said something like, "Oh, may we love all people on the earth and the planet, and may we make a just transition to renewable whatevers." And so I just wanted to bring that sense of love and also the we in it, you know, which is not
mm-hmm.
like us and them, but may we all, everyone in the world, you
mm-hmm.
know. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
So in introducing love into situations
mm-hmm.
where
mm-hmm.
people might forget what a potent force love is.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
right. All right. So we might think about, you know, you put up that thing, we could all go there and, you know, I know you know this. In the with the bridge walk, we had how many acts of conscious, compassionate awareness?
Mm-hmm.
Bunches, right, that we committed to and went way over the top on that, had way more, tracked way more than we thought would ever be possible, and probably actually didn't get close to how many there really were.
Yeah.
And so with something like you're talking about, wow,
mm-hmm.
what fun.
Yeah.
See what we
yeah.
could do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, yeah, they're dropping in Port Townsend, and they're dropping in Fremont,
everywhere.
And they're dropping in,
yeah.
you know. So,
yeah
I think we're going to, I think we're on to something here.
I think we are, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, thank you very much. It's lovely to have a chance to talk to you. So thank you to you and Michael and our entire Sangha and my coach.
Pleasure. Yep. And God.
Thank you.
Let's thank God.
Okay,
yeah.
I can do
yeah.
that too.
All right. Thank you so much. And congratulations on your world sitting record. That's
okay.
I put you in the, I haven't seen the Guinness Book of World Records for most days, consecutive days of meditation, but wow, that's an impressive number.
Oh, thanks very much.
All right. Take care. Good night.
Okay. You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Carol. And another fabulous conversation, Sherry.
Yeah. Wow. We have an amazing sangha, don't we?
We
truly.
Do have an amazing sangha. It's a great privilege.
Extraordinary. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow.
Yes. Yeah, that's why I stay. The inspiration.
Me too. If you people weren't so wonderful, I'd be out of here.
And it's 5:59, and I think it's time to call it a show.
Call it a show, get you out of that technology quagmire that those people want to put you in, give you a week to work out the kinks, and meet back up here then. How about that?
Yes. Perfect.
All right.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you so much, Michael. Good night.
Good night.